I'm JP Davidson, and this is The Sound of Small Business, inspiring stories and hard-earned lessons from successful Canadian entrepreneurs. Brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
You got it? Okay.
Good morning, Venture Publishing. Diane speaking.
Hello, and thank you for calling Canadian Woodworking and Home Improvement Magazine, Kirk's North Magazine, Progress Magazine, Western Horse Review.
Diane speaking.
Saltscapes. Diane speaking.
Diane speaking.
That, as you may have guessed, is Diane. She's the customer care team leader here at the Oyster Group in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. The Oyster Group handles magazine subscriptions for mostly small and regional publications. They take care of customer service, marketing, circulation audits, the subscriber database, those sorts of things. They do not sell oysters.
Sometimes we have actually gotten oysters for people.
You got oysters for people when they called, mistakenly thinking you're an oyster seller?
We did that once, yeah.
That's Faith Drinnen, founder of the Oyster Group. And around here, even wrong numbers get exceptional customer service.
This guy phoned and he said, "Do you sell oysters?" And I said, "No, we actually market magazines." And he said, "I'm just here visiting and I would just love to get some oysters." And I said, "Well, you know what? I'm sure we could get you some oysters if you really want them." And we got him the oysters and my husband showed him how to shuck them.
Faith's dad was in the oyster business. She grew up overlooking Malpac Bay on Prince Edward Island, and there was a huge oyster sign outside her window. So when it came time to name the company, the Oyster Group seemed like a great fit. It can be a little confusing, but to Faith, it's been a real asset too.
It just sets us apart in an industry that fulfillment bureaus are typically very boring, data-oriented. You look at their websites and it's guys in suits and women with headsets on. But we don't see it that way. We're dealing with people. The database is full of people. It's not just numbers. So this is about relationships. It's not about selling magazines.
The Oyster Group has been in business for over 20 years. But Faith is still kind of surprised that this is where life has taken her.
I had always wanted to have my own company, but for some reason, it never occurred to me that it was going to be this. For some reason, I thought it was going to be what I loved, which was more artsy and working with fiber. And I was just biding my time till I could get enough money to buy a farm or marry a farmer or whatever, because, you know, I hated office work.
Faith, the would-be farmer, may have hated office work, but back in the early 80s, that's exactly where she was. In a magazine office, handling subscriptions. Picture a typewriter and a tattered book of postal codes on every desk. Faith remembers being put off by the way the subscription department was treated.
The girls, and because it was always the girls in the fulfillment department, were the bottom of the barrel.
They weren't paid much, and the company didn't put any money into training them. Faith couldn't understand this because, to her, you can't really have a magazine without subscriptions and renewals.
I mean, renewal rates are the life and blood of a magazine. That's what keeps them afloat. And I saw it, from my point of view, as a very important part of the industry. So I started out as a fulfillment clerk. After a few years, I became supervisor of the department. And then when computers came in, I could see that this was going somewhere.
Computers, or rather one really big computer, changed Faith's whole career trajectory.
I remember we had this special air-conditioned room and you couldn't eat in there. And the backup tapes were honestly like a huge donut, but a donut that's, you know, 6 feet across. There was three of them and I would have to carry them one at a time because they were so big. And this is like, you know, like a memory stick now.
Since Faith knew subscriptions, she was brought on to work on the company's newly computerized subscriber database.
It absolutely fascinated me. All the little details. I loved it. And that's when I realized, this is what I want to do.
She loved it so much that she enrolled in a double major in computer science and marketing. And remember, this was 1983, so the intersection of those two things wasn't a massive industry like it is today. After finishing school, she went back to her old employer with this amazing new set of skills. And they put her in charge of the whole subscriptions department. It could have been the start of something great, but it wasn't.
I came back, didn't get paid much more money. And I had a lot of experience, and I was, you know, I was pretty valuable to the company. But still, when the receptionist was at lunch and the phone rang, I was expected to answer it.
That's when Faith realized that in order to have the kind of life she wanted, she'd have to leave the company and start her own.
I needed to be in control of my world.
Faith couldn't have picked a better time to take the entrepreneurial leap. Demand for people with database marketing skills was exploding. She quit her job, and her old boss immediately became her first client. Because really, there was no way they'd be able to find someone to replace her. She decided to run the new business out of her little house in the tiny fishing village of Chesacook, Nova Scotia. Her old boss wasn't so sure about this.
I remember he said, "You can't run a business out of a house in Chesacook." I said, "Well, yeah, I'm going to. I'm going to make Chesacook the database marketing capital of the world."
She got herself a slightly more reasonably sized computer and set up shop at the kitchen table.
It was a huge gift to work from home. I had never felt so free in all my life. It was all up to me now. It was all up to me, and I wasn't scared, I wasn't nervous, nothing.
Faith was in business for herself, and business was good. Really good.
There was such demand for these services that I had never, ever anticipated. And I had people working with me, but they didn't have the skills to really handle a lot of the stuff. So it was just, it was a really extremely busy time as well.
Faith got to know her local RBC branch manager pretty well in those early years. She got a loan to build a little office sunroom onto the side of her house so she could free up the kitchen table. She and her husband Donald ended up getting loans to expand the home office twice more. And by then, it was more office than home.
So at the peak, we'd have 15 to 20 people coming into our house, coming to work. And we're doing big jobs now, like 200,000 pieces for fundraisers. And there'd be brochures and those things. They would arrive in boxes from the printers. So we would have tunnels in our house, in our bedroom and downstairs where we lived, because there was nowhere else to put them. So we'd have tunnels of stuff everywhere where we'd walk through.
Oh, and did I mention she and Donald had two kids during this time? But that didn't slow Faith down one bit.
We had to print 24 hours a day. So we had to keep refilling the paper. And it dings. It would ding when it ran out of paper. So I piled a mattress from our side of the house into the office side of the house and put it by the printers. And so whenever I heard a ding, I would get up. And I remember I was 6 months pregnant with Maggie, because I remember getting up wasn't as easy as it could have been if I wasn't. And refilling, yeah, all those papers all night long for a few nights. It was crazy. And I'm happy to say this is a very happy, well-adjusted, healthy girl now. But at the time, like, what was I thinking?
The growth of the business was unrelenting. It was a lot of work, but it was exciting too.
We were one of the 10 fastest growing companies in Atlantic Canada, and I was the Atlantic Canadian finalist for Canadian Woman Entrepreneur of the Year. It was so exciting to me. It was a real high. I mean, I even changed my voicemail, like, "Hi, this is Faith, it's Saturday, you know, I'm in the office these hours." I literally worked all the time.
Coming up, Faith discovers the difference between a busy company and a sustainable one. But first, The Sound of Small Business is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. Shira Nobles is Faith's account manager at RBC in Dartmouth. But beyond that, they're friends, and they do charity work together.
Faith and I we really get along, and I really believe in her and her business. So she's a big supporter of Dress for Success, so I'm usually involved in those projects as well. She's involved with fundraising through running. She's also part of an organization that I attend monthly meetings for, and it's called Business Women Connect.
When she's not running charity marathons with Faith, Shira's busy at work behind her very crowded desk.
There's no other account manager for small business that has a desk like mine. I have everything on my desk from lobster fishermen, doctors, lawyers, a lot of tradespeople on my desk. So I've gotten to know a lot about snow removal, what goes into that. And I have a mussel farm on my desk, some financing for fishing licenses, financing for boat renovations. It's never boring. I cover three separate branches. So one is Tacoma, where my main office is. And then I also support Muscadabit Harbor and Porter's Lake. So those are very small, tight-knit communities. And because I'm completely mobile, I go out to my clients. So that's one thing that's been wonderful, is actually getting out and seeing what my clients do. And they get to show me what they love. So that was the same for Faith. I've actually been there, gone for a tour. That's the really rewarding part of my job. And it was just been a real pleasure to work with Faith.
To connect with your own trusted business specialist, visit your local RBC Royal Bank branch or go to rbc.com/buildingbusiness today. Faith's business was growing incredibly quickly, eating up all her time and consuming her home. Something had to give. So one day, her husband Donald came to her.
He said, "I think it's time to move the business out. This is not a home-based business anymore. We are living at your office," because we were living in the office.
Faith had loved the freedom of working from home. Being near the kids when they were little was great, and you can't beat the commute. But she couldn't help but agree with Donald. The business had taken over their lives. They got some office space nearby, and Faith rediscovered the freedom of not working from home.
I still remember the first Friday I got in my car and drove away from the office. And it was just, wow. I'm actually, for the first time in 8 years, I'm leaving it behind and had a weekend.
But even with the business out of the house, Faith continued to be overworked and exhausted. Her business just wasn't sustainable.
The reason that I had to work so many hours was that I wasn't charging enough money. It's easy to get lots of customers if you're pretty cheap. So that was a big mistake that I made.
The company had grown out of control and it was losing money. But before Faith could catch her breath and figure out how to turn it around, in the span of a month, her son was diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome and her father died.
I was so burned out. I just couldn't deal at all. So I walked a lot. I just would go out and walk and try and figure out, okay, how do I get myself out of this mess? Like, how do I do that? I've got these people that have worked hard to create this company. It's not fair for them to lose their job. I've got clients that, what are they gonna do if I go out of business, and how's my family going to survive? Because I'm the main financial provider. I felt like, you know, I started this company to have all these choices, and now I have none. Or at least that's what it felt like.
It all came to a head during a phone call.
Somebody had called me up and said they wanted to nominate me for some award because I was so successful. And I lost it on the phone. I started crying and I said, I'm not successful.
The person on the other end suggested she enlist some help. And Faith took that to heart. She got connected with the local Center for Women in Business, which was a lifesaver.
I met other women entrepreneurs, and that was huge, huge. I just felt like I found my tribe.
The center set her up with a business and life coach. And through the coaching process, Faith realized that she had some choices after all. It took some drastic changes, but Faith was able to get her life and her business back in balance. She transformed the business from being a general database marketing company to focusing strictly on magazines. She cut the staff down to 6, and she paid to train key employees so she wouldn't be the only one with certain skills.
And the company started to be profitable again.
By slowing down and being strategic about how she spent her time, Faith regained the freedom that being an entrepreneur can bring. And she could do the things that really mattered to her, like spending more time with her kids. And now, 23 years after first sitting down at that kitchen table, the company is doing well. It's stable. Faith is getting a little restless, and she has a new dream. Faith is sitting at a spinning wheel. You know, the big old-fashioned wooden things driven by a foot pedal for turning sheep's wool into yarn.
It's very much like meditation for me. I love the feel of fleece, and I absolutely love spinning.
The new dream is a return to something Faith has always wanted. The would-be farmer is finally getting that farm, and sheep, and a whole new business.
It's sisterhood fiber. It's about yarn and wool and sheep, but it's the fiber that keeps us all together and gives us that strength.
She wants to help other women find the balance that she has, to sort of pass along the help she once received.
So I think we're going to have women retreats on my farm. We're going to have retreats for women where they will come and they'll work with fiber or not, but they'll just come and find joy and relax, enjoy each other's company.
But pursuing this new dream means taking a step back from the Oyster Group. And taking a step back from the company you founded isn't a simple or quick process. You have to find someone you really trust. And for Faith, that someone is Jennifer Taylor.
It's really a crazy feeling to have someone other than your mother really believe in you. Like, truly, I know 100% she believes in me. So it feels really good.
Jennifer is VP of Client Services now, but she started 12 years ago as an intern. She and Faith have been planning Jen's takeover of the day-to-day of the company for years, and they hired an HR consultant to help them put all the stuff that was just in Faith's head down on paper before Faith moves away to the farm.
We didn't always have a lot of rules, so to speak. So we invested a lot of time and money into putting together a really great HR plan. And we've met with the whole team and we've discussed it. And it's just a really good way for me to lead and lead by myself. It's basically a guideline for me, so I don't have to make up the rules as I go.
The transition process is well underway. Faith now works from home most days. She's confident leaving the company in Jen's hands.
I can see when I come in here, people don't ask me questions anymore. They ask Jen. And Jen has risen to the challenge. It's just, I really have to pinch myself when I come in.
Faith learned a long time ago that good things come from not trying to do everything yourself. The Oyster Group's motto is believe in yourself, believe in each other, and believe in the client. It's the words Faith lives by, her path to exactly the kind of life she wants.
I know from personal experience that when people believe in you, you do begin to believe in yourself, and then absolutely anything is possible. And I strongly believe that these aren't just words that I'm saying because I've lived it.
Now that we've heard the story of the Oyster Group, let's take a closer look at the lessons we might learn from Faith. I spoke to Vicky Saunders, entrepreneur, mentor, and business advisor.
Faith's first client was her old boss. How common is that?
It's very common for people who are working inside a business and not that happy, that when they go to start their own business, they often take or create their first client out of the place they just left. And in most cases, I've seen when you leave that business, the people know you well, so there's already trust. So it's pretty easy to get your first client. I think it's a really great strategy.
It also seems like a bit of a tough move to quit your job and then turn around and try to sell your old boss on maybe paying a higher rate for the same service they were receiving. Do you have any tips on navigating those waters?
Well, I think if you want to have the business you're leaving as your first client, you obviously have to have a great relationship with those people. And this is really one of the only ways to get people to realize your value sometimes. When you've been in an organization for a long time, people start to take you for granted. And so to kind of go out into the world and then say, here's the price tag on this, it forces the boss of that business to sort of look deeply inside and go, oh my God, this is really critical to my business. I have to pay for this. And we trust her. And it's going to be a lot easier than testing out somebody else that we don't know.
That's when you find out if you're really irreplaceable or not.
That's very true.
Faith says one of her big mistakes early on was not charging enough. This must be a really common error.
It's a very common error to not charge enough, especially if you don't really have the real costs baked in. I think it's always easy to get clients if you're charging less than everybody else, but then you have to sort of step back and go, why am I charging less than everybody else? And what is the true cost of this? Because if you're going to be in this for the long haul, then you really need to have real numbers and you need to be able to get yourself out of the business and you need to be able to hire other people to take over. So stepping back and really looking at why are other people charging 30% more than me? Is that because that's the real cost? Am I getting away with this because I'm not paying myself very well and I'm working out of home and not paying rent? You have to kind of look at those elements.
Faith ended up getting some help from her local Center for Women in Business. Can you talk about the importance of these networks?
I find that for women entrepreneurs in particular, having peer groups around to support you is huge. So the fact that she reached out to a women's business center locally is great. And you could hear from her voice that it really helped her. Oftentimes I hear a lot from entrepreneurs that they feel very alone and that the issues that they're dealing with, no one else really understands. And when I see women get into a group together and start talking about the challenges, they're like, oh my God, do you feel the same way too? This is amazing. And just knowing that there are other people like that out there that you can bounce ideas off is hugely helpful. As an entrepreneur, it's really important to get a peer group support. And if you Google anywhere online, you know, meetup, New Brunswick, tonight, entrepreneurs in the media space, there's going to be a meetup. Like, it's unbelievable how many meetings there are all over the place that you can pop into. They're very, very helpful to share learning that you're having and, you know, struggles that you're going through. If you can find other people that have gone through it before, it usually helps you to move through things faster.
So Faith has a new business dream now, and she's moving away from the day-to-day operations of the business she founded. She has a manager that she's trusting to take over that side of the business while she moves into more of an advisory kind of big picture role. Her other option would have been to sell. Do you have any tips for founders who want to move on to other things?
I love how Faith approached the transition of leadership here. Having an HR coach come in and help to take what's out of her head to support the new leader is great. She also had worked with the person who's taking over the business for a while. They'd built up a rapport and a relationship. So I think that transition sounds really nice and smooth. A lot of times what happens is a founder just gets so done with the business that they just kind of rush to get rid of it. And I think this sounds like a very thoughtful approach. And so I would recommend that people look at that. If they've worked with someone before, that's fantastic. If they're going to sell, that's a different kind of thing. They need to sort of look at the values of the person that's taking it over and be clear on what they're trying to get out of it. But this sounds like a great transition plan to me.
Are there any other big lessons from Faith's story that stood out?
I think one of the things that's really interesting to me is that when you start a business, you do it to be free. And I often hear the story of people working themselves to death with their business and thinking, you know, you did this to be free. Why are you working so hard at this? Why aren't you stepping back and taking time? You can define running your business however you want. You can set your hours, you can set your culture, you can hire the kind of people you want. And I think we get into this working ourselves to death thing very often. So it's really important, I think, to have a coach along the way, as she did later on, to step back and ask her, you know, what do you want? Don't just assume that you have to work and work and work and work and work. This is your gig. You can decide what to do with it.
Thanks for your help, Vicky.
You're welcome.
Vicky Saunders is the founder of CEO. She spoke with me from Toronto.
This has been The Sound of Small Business, brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. Next week, we visit Blue Letter Law in Toronto, Ontario, where Salima Virani remembers her first entrepreneurial venture at age 10.
I wanted to learn to swim, but of course my family couldn't afford it. And when I called the YMCA swim program and they said, well, if you have a group of 10, then we give one seat free to the organizer of the group. So I knocked door to door, persuading parents how it was so important for their kids to swim in the summer. And I signed up 10 kids and got my swim ticket.
Subscribe to this podcast series to hear this and other stories of Canadian entrepreneurs who are never afraid to dive into the deep end. Search for The Sound of Small Business wherever you find podcasts, or visit rbc.com/buildingbusiness, where you can find advice and tips on how to start, manage, and grow your business. This podcast series is intended as general information only and is not to be relied upon as constituting legal or other professional advice.